Welcome back, Dan Lebatard Show. Peter Burns, Katie George. Remember, all guests appear via the Dan appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Easy for me to say. Joe Johnson, great NBA player, going to be playing the TBT. Going to be joining us here in a couple minutes. But remember, soccer is back on ESPN Plus. Serie A, FA Cup, MLS, more. Get those original series, exclusive studio shows, and the complete 30 for 30 library. You can stream soccer for the best leagues and tournaments around the world, all in HD, all on your favorite devices. The beautiful game lives on ESPN Plus. Sign up today at ESPNplus.com or in the ESPN app. Katie George, Sports Center Update. Let's roll.
Jimmy Johnson has tested negative twice for the coronavirus and has been cleared to race this Sunday at Kentucky Speedway. According to sources, the PGA of America is expected to announce today that the Ryder Cup will be pushed back to 2021 and the President's Cup will be pushed back to 2022. That is now confirmed. For all the latest headlines and information, tune into SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Thank you, Katie George. I had the Ryder Cup scoop, right? Had it? Should I have gone with it 2 days ago when I said that it was going to happen? Should I have done it?
You Katie Camlined it. You know, she had the information and deleted the tweet. You had the information. You could have scooped it, but you didn't.
I know, and I didn't. Unfortunate. Joining us right now on the show, Pennzoil Performance Line, one of the greats in basketball, one of my favorite guys to ever watch because he did it so good. Joe Johnson joining us. You're going to be playing in the TBT and the tournament, the basketball tournament that's kicking off tomorrow. Joe, let's start there. How has this process been to get everybody on the same page about making sure that you're safe getting ready to play this tournament?
It's been a little interesting. You know, the protocol before we even got here to Ohio, you know, you had to take a couple tests, you know, at home and then send them in. So it was a little bit of a struggle, but once we got here inside this little bubble, man, it's been great. You know, everything is handled very well, and they're just making it a great, safe environment.
How's the food? I saw the picture of the NBA players in the Orlando bubble, and they weren't too happy with it. I'm sure that that's going to get figured out. Like, what are you getting? Chef meals? You getting decent grubbed out there?
And we get it's a hit and miss. You know, it's like the first day I was here, like we had like some little sandwiches, but then like the next day. We had, like, a gourmet meal, like, you know, pasta, Parmesan chicken, you know, that type of deal. So it's kind of like a hit and miss.
Joe, you're playing as a member on Overseas Elite, and you're opening on July 9th against the Armored Athletes. Who are your teammates? Who can we expect to see when we turn on the television on ESPN when you guys get going?
All right. So just to kind of let you guys know, how I hooked up with Overseas Elite was my little brother, Jeremy Pargo, who played with them last year. He invited me to play with them, and obviously he took a deal overseas, so he's not here. So I came here not knowing none of these guys. You know what I mean? I have never worked out with them. I knew of them, but I didn't know them. I had never met them. So I got here. I got a chance to meet them. We still haven't worked out together as a team because, you know, everything is kind of crazy around here, so we're just trying to take the necessary procedures as far as keeping everybody safe, because if one guy tests positive, they kick the whole team out. So we're not even taking that chance. So we're going to wing it, and when we get out there on the floor tomorrow, we'll see how we put it together.
That's fascinating to me, because it seems as if, and Joe Johnson joining us here on the Dan Lebatard Show, for the tournament, it's almost the hard work is making sure everyone's safe and staying in the quarantine versus actual rolling the ball out and getting it together. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. Keeping everybody safe is probably the hardest part. And for us, Overseas Elite, you know, we got great veteran guard play and Bobby and Pooh. So, you know, I think that's a plus as well. You know what I mean? And then we got some great young talent who are very hungry and very willing to get out there and get started. So I'm looking forward to the challenges that's before us, man. I think this is going to be a lot of fun.
Joe, we were talking earlier in the show. Today is the anniversary, the 10-year anniversary of when LeBron James made the decision to go from Cleveland down to Miami, which led to two championships. Do you remember where you were? You were obviously in the league, but do you remember where you were the night that you watched or heard that LeBron was taking his talents to South Beach?
Yeah, I was back home in Little Rock, Arkansas, sitting and couldn't wait just like everybody else. 10 years, man, it went by fast.
It's crazy, right? What was the reaction that you had? I mean, I can't even, you know, obviously text messages back and forth. I mean, was this like well-known secret that that was happening? Or was this like everybody else like, holy hell, I don't know what he's going to do.
No, I think everybody kind of knew that he was leaving Cleveland. For him to do the decision, you had to be like, well, why would he be doing this big deal if he was going back to Cleveland, you know? So I kind of had a sense like, oh, man, he must be going somewhere. I don't know. And then you see D. Wade and Bosh on ESPN, and Bosh was like, good luck, LeBron. I'm like, all right. So, I just kind of put some stuff together, but I think everybody kind of knew he was leaving Cleveland.
You're clearly in a bubble of sorts getting ready for the tournament that's going to be played there in Columbus, Ohio. What have you heard from maybe former teammates or friends that are in the NBA who have either gotten to Orlando for their campus situation or are heading to Orlando this week to gear up for the NBA restart?
I really haven't heard anything. I got one of my best friends, Gennaro Pargo, who's an assistant coach for Portland Trail Blazers. Me and him, we haven't talked the past few days, so I don't even know when they get down there. But to be in that bubble for a month and a half, 2 months, 3 months, man, that's going to be tough. I mean, we're in Columbus in a bubble, but we only here for 10 days. You know what I mean? So this is a breeze compared to what those guys going to have to deal with.
Joe, if you put yourself in that situation, or do you think that there'll be guys at some point, and you astutely just pointed out, it's not 10 days, it's a month. You think guys at some point will get itchy at week two, week three, and just go, I'm out. I just can't do this anymore and walk away?
It may be a couple guys do that. I can't see, you know. I mean, once you commit to that, you know, it's going to be kind of tough to kind of get out of it. I mean, yes, you're going to have your challenges, but that's part of it. So, I don't know, man, but I'm interested to see how they're going to handle that.
There have been some people, Joe, that have said, you know, this championship, whoever's crowned, hopefully there is somebody crowned at the end of it. There's going to be an asterisk next to their name. Do you feel like that's right, or do you feel like maybe this is going to be the toughest championship ever to be won because of all the different factors that are going on outside of the bubble and within?
I wouldn't say an asterisk. I think because everybody's going to be dealing with the same thing. They all going to be pretty much in the same environment. And this is what we're dealing with right now. This is our new normal. So, you know, we have to play the cards we dealt. And those guys got to come out and compete. I know it's going to be a lot different, you know, without the fans in there. But, you know, you got guys, you know, you look at LeBron, who's, what, 36 or about to be 36. Like, as hungry as he is probably for another title, you know, this is a great chance for the Lakers. Like, you know, I can only imagine how those guys feel.
Yeah, and Dwight Howard said he is going to be opting in and is going to be going down to Orlando to play. And, of course, J.R. Smith as well, too, with the Los Angeles Lakers. So my question is here. I'm the anchor for the SEC network, and I work here with Katie George, who works and runs basically the ACC network. Can you tell Katie that as good as Duke is, as good as North Carolina is, as good as Virginia is, nobody could have rolled up in Bud Walton Arena when you guys had it rolling? Like, they wouldn't have been ready for that type of environment, right?
Oh, no. Man, we used to mop teams coming in Bud Walton. That's a great atmosphere, a great environment. And my college days were probably the best years of basketball for me. It taught me a lot. And playing in front of those fans, you know, I'm from Little Rock, so playing in front of those fans was awesome.
What was the hardest place to play in the league? Like, whenever you were playing, because you bounced around, obviously had an unbelievable career, and you went to a bunch of different places. What was the one place where you felt like it was more like going onto the road and going into Lexington and playing at Rupp or something like that?
Utah, Denver. Those high altitude, especially in Utah, because the fans there are fanatics. You know, the Jazz are pretty much everything for them. They don't have another professional sport. So, The Jazz fans are amazing. I remember going in there playing, and man, that's a very hostile environment. And then you fighting against them and the altitude, like, that's tough.
What was the sleepiest place? The place that you had to get up yourself because you looked at it, you're like, this place is dead anyway.
The sleepiest place? I don't know, man. Probably, you know what? Probably when I first signed with Atlanta in 2005. Man, that was it was bad when I first got there. It was bad. You know, we probably had about 400 or 500 people in the stands. It was bad. You had to create your own energy.
Bring your own juice, right? That's what they say. Bring your own juice.
Yeah.
Man, you're going to be bringing it here. It is thetournament.com for more information. It's going to be on ESPN and ESPN2. Hey, just tell these young bucks to just give you the rock and just be like, just watch out of the way. Joe Johnson's about to go to work. Can you go third person on these young kids or what?
Man, listen. Hey, I'm going to come out and compete at the highest level, have fun with it. And like I said, we got a great team, a mixture of vets and young guys. We just got to put it together.
That's awesome. Well, best of luck, Joe. We really appreciate the time.
See you, man.
Thank you, guys, man. Thank you.
There it is, Joe Johnson. I love how he goes out there and says, man, it was tough when I was with the Hawks. It was what's tougher, playing with the Atlanta Hawks back in 05 with like 75 people in the stands or going to play this tournament tomorrow and not having to roll the ball out with your teammates? Like what, Katie, are you – which one?
I mean, they haven't practiced together yet, is what he said. Like, they're just supposed to go play in a game tomorrow. This makes me intrigued to watch.
This is the angle. This is not as good as the angle of the WWE wrestling match in which someone's going to lose an eye, but I'm actually a little bit more intrigued with this as well, too. Katie George, all right, let's end the segment. We got Advance Auto Parts. Let's roll.
Well, Advance Auto Parts has added another winner to their roster, Die Hard Batteries. That's right, Die Hard Batteries are now at Advance. And if you're a stat freak like me, you know that means Advance got a player with unrivaled reliability, durability, and power. Plus, you can get free testing and free installation with purchase, and you don't even need an appointment. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest locations. See store for details.
Finally, some huge news that broke earlier today. It changes the way that we're going to think about coronavirus and actually getting sports back. We'll tell you what that is coming up next. Katie George, Peter Burns. This is the Dan Le Batard Show. Little Man Who Sold the World. Is this the Nirvana Unplugged edition from Rejoins? That's pretty solid. Peter Burns, Katie George here in the Dan Le Batard Show, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. And it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. I said earlier, Katie, that big news today from NASCAR, of all things, that was going to possibly change the sports world. But this story about Jimmy Johnson, how many days ago was it that he tested positive for coronavirus and it was a big deal that everybody put it out there on their headlines?
He tested positive last Friday. And so he's taken out of his race this past weekend in Indianapolis.
So the big news is that now he's already been cleared by NASCAR to race. And so I'm not a math major, but that's not 2 weeks of quarantining. That's not 10 days. This is at least gone by what NASCAR's testing protocols that he's got the A-OK to play or to compete.
Yeah, according to NASCAR's protocol, you have to provide 2 negative tests before you are allowed to be instated and resume racing. And so after testing positive last Friday and being removed from competition, Jimmy Johnson has tested negative twice. He tested negative on Monday of this week and then followed up by another negative test on Tuesday. That's promising in my mind. I mean, obviously, you and I have so many conversations about what the fall is going to look like in terms of college football and just sports resuming in general. For Jimmy Johnson to go from Friday being positive for the coronavirus to 2 negative tests within 3 days, that's pretty big. And so now he's able to resume racing at Kentucky Speedway this Saturday.
What's frustrating about this? And I'm asking just in the ether and into you, Katie, about like, I feel like this becomes such a political thing where there is at least some type of middle ground, right? I mean, we're starting to get more and more information and more numbers, and we see stuff like this with Jimmy Johnson of testing positive. Hey, 5 days later, he's back, right? Like, if you catch coronavirus, it is not the end-all, be-all for 95, 99, whatever the percentage of people, a lot of people, but yet it is still something, right? It's not fake. It's not, you know, there are people dying from it. So there is a medium ground in how sports is trying to have this delicate balance of walking that line. And do you feel more confident now that college football and the NFL and Major League Baseball will take this headline or this news or this information and use that in their PR attempt to get back sports?
Well, if you look at it at the surface level, okay, so Saturday, Sunday, he has the coronavirus, or we assume he has the coronavirus, and then on Monday when he retests, he's negative. So he had the coronavirus for, what, a couple of days? That, to me, surface level, seems like a positive story. But then if you're going to read further into it, I have questions. Like, for one, was it a false positive that took him out of racing? Because the testing isn't as accurate as we would all hope it to be. Number two, was he on the back end of having the coronavirus when he was tested? And so we didn't know that maybe he was walking around and competing with the coronavirus prior to? Like, was he on his last day of fighting the coronavirus and not knowing it because he was asymptomatic, test positive Friday, and then by Monday he's negative again? Like, there's just too many unknowns with this, and so that's why it's frustrating for me. Like, yes, I want to look at this story and be like, hey, we're going to have football in the fall. Like, this is awesome. But there's too many unknowns to really be gung-ho about it because it could have been a false positive. He could have been on the back end of the virus. Like, we just don't know. And that's the problem. And you can't tell based on the testing, only if you're getting tested frequently a couple times a week or every day, which is something we're going to see with the NBA restart, as well as we're already seeing with the MLS as they start their games tonight. So there's just a lot of unknowns for it. And I can't say for certain how I feel one way or the other, Peter.
I will tell you this, I feel more confident now because I do believe that we get punch drunk on headlines and wow moments, right? Whether it's social media that amplifies that or whether it's just discussions in our own personal text messages or just a discussion with your neighbor, right? I'm not going to tell them, hey, things are going well. I'm going to be like, did you hear what happened? And so when the Jimmy Johnson headlines come out, or you've got NBA players, or Clemson has 30-some-odd players, that's a wow moment. But my question that really hasn't been answered by many people, or hasn't been written about, is what happens after that? What happens when they're healthy? What happens when they're back? And now this is the first, probably, star that we're seeing that has, hey, I had it, I dealt with it a couple days, I got two negative tests, and I'm back. And I think that sports, and the decision makers of sports, the Adam Silvers, the Roger Goodells, the conference commissioners in college football, haven't, to this point, Katie, had that moment. Had that, okay, the headline was this, but then here's what happened. A lot of people ripped college football of saying, well, you're back too early. And June the 8th, we shouldn't be back this early. I think it's the opposite. I think the fact that college kids were able to get back on campus, understand the process a little bit more, and develop a game plan, and by God, perhaps be 100% okay with this, then that helps the chances of college sports being played. And that helps the chances of the NFL. That helps the chances of the NBA getting back and understanding this. But again, it's fascinating at this point that this is, I feel like, the first star that we've had that's gotten it and then back and ready to roll.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the college football angle because today is a big day in the grand scheme of decisions coming down the pipeline and the fact that the Ivy League, yes, not an FBS Power 5 conference, the Ivy League is deciding today whether they will have a 7-game conference-only schedule that will be played in late September through the fall, or they will move their entire fall sports season to the back end of the spring and play college football from April to May. And so that decision is pending today, and we should hear some news. And it's kind of
what do you
like,
think they do? What do you think? Yeah, they're Ivy League, wicked smart. What decision do you
smart,
think?
Wicked smart. Oh, I don't know. I think they move it to the spring. I think they move it to the spring. And then what's the conversation we're having tomorrow?
It's interesting because I don't think it matters. And what I mean by that is no matter what the Ivy League says, if they do decide to punt and play college football in the spring, I don't think they make the decisions on the same level that the ACC or the Big Ten or the Pac-12 and, God, absolutely, the SEC does. I think there's different factors in play for a bevy of different reasons. So at no point do I think the commissioner of the conference, he's definitely Greg Sankey, commissioner of the SEC. I do think that he will be paying attention to what the Ivy League does, but I still don't believe that that's going to affect. And now the question is if the Ivy League does it and there's this herd mentality where Mountain West says they're going to do it and Conference USA says they're going to do it, and all of a sudden you get
momentum
six or seven
builds.
Different... Right. Then all of a sudden, is it about the science of it and whether or not it's good to go, or is it a PR thing? And I think that's what college sports is trying to decide right now, is how do you PR this and have sports versus what the numbers are saying? We'll talk about that coming up. Derek Pomanski from LSU Football going to talk about the prospects of playing in the fall, how they are getting the LSU Tigers ready for their season. And I'm fascinated also about how you create a championship ring. LSU got their rings yesterday. We'll discuss about the process of that. That was Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Peter Burns, Katie George. This is Dan Lebatard Show. Lebatard Show with Stu Gotts. It is Peter Burns and Katie George in this week. Guests appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Derek Pomanski from LSU Football going to be joining us here in a couple minutes. Remember, UFC heads to Fight Island for a title fight, triple header, UFC 251. Don't want to miss it. UFC 251 exclusively available. ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/PPV for more details. More details on a SportsCenter update. Here's Katie George.
Jimmy Johnson has tested negative twice for the coronavirus and has been cleared to race this Sunday at Kentucky Speedway. According to sources, the PGA of America is expected to announce today that the Ryder Cup will be pushed back to 2021 and the President's Cup will be pushed back to 2022. That has now been confirmed. These days, it's good to be prepared, and that includes your vehicle. That's why Advance Auto Parts has free vehicle battery testing and installation with no appointment needed, and also curbside pickup on any order. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest locations. See store for details for all the latest headlines and information. Tune into SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Thank you, Katie George. Joining us right now on that Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, one of my favorite people from my favorite teams, Derek Pomanski, a.k.a. kind of the chief of staff for LSU football. And here's the most important question that we're going to start with, and I don't know, they'll all disintegrate after this question. When you go to the supermarket, Derek, okay.
Doing this again.
Yes, we are, because Chris needs to be taught a lesson. When you go to the supermarket and you're done with your shopping cart, have you ever just left the cart in the middle of the parking lot?
Here's my take on this. People who don't return their grocery cart to the collection area are scum. You need to bring your cart back to where it comes from. It is just being a good civic partner. I've got to presume that if you can't do that, then you're not going to follow other rules. So bring it back to where it comes from.
Chris Cody, you would like to retort here?
It's just, this is just going to be, everyone's going to say the same thing. You're not, the way you set up that question, by the way, you're leading them to the path.
It is a little leading.
You
should just end it. Yes, you should just end it with where do you leave it? Not, do you leave it in the middle?
I'm done responding to this. I'm done responding to this.
Well, we want you to be done responding to it because it's a terrible answer. And, Derek, I appreciate that because yesterday I said people were scum of the earth, and he used the exact word, scum. So we are on the same page on this.
Thank you.
There you go, Derek.
Obviously, let's start with this, and not shopping carts. But how are you guys getting prepared right now? Is it a 24-hour by 24-hour look at the headlines, get ready for LSU football in the fall? Is it week to week? How is this team preparing to defend their title?
Well, what we've done internally here is that we understand we've got great leadership with Scott Woodward and Virge Osberry, and medically with Shelly Mullinex and Jack Marucci. So what we've done from following Coach O's lead, in May when we brought the staff back, we went, you know, we have it where as soon as you come in the morning, they take your temperature, everybody's masked. There's plenty of opportunities to get sanitized. So we were able to do that for a few weeks before the players came back. Since then, we've been able to take that information that we've kind of gathered there and made it a little bit more thorough for the players. And so what we're doing is we're preparing as though the season's going to happen. And then our leadership, who's involved in, you know, the top down and making sure that all the right decisions are made for player safety, player health, for the health of all of our support staff and coaching staff. And so they're going to make the right decisions on that. What we can do is all we can do, which is right now prepare as though the season's going to happen and then be able to adapt and adjust in the event that things were, you know, changed or, you know, shifted or whatever. But for right now, we're doing everything we can to make sure that if the season is played as scheduled, we're ready to go.
So there's these protocols and parameters set up, right, when the athletes are in your facility and they're working out or when they start practicing here in a few weeks together. But there's obviously this concern of what happens when your athletes leave the facility and they go back to their dorms or their apartments or their homes, and what they do with their friends or during their free time. What are the conversations like with the coaches, with their players right now of, hey, we need to be taking this seriously because what you do outside of football matters even more?
Yeah, certainly, Katie. To kind of take the information that we've been able to gather and educate our guys has been something that's been, you know, kind of at the forefront here. Coach O, and when we have our Zoom team meetings, he always makes sure that Shelly comes on and gives an update of what's happening and kind of relays again and again to let these guys know this is what we're doing right, this is what we have to get better at. And so there's always been an opportunity to educate and not, that's not just from the player's perspective. There's a lot of us on the staff here because truly nationwide, we're all dealing with the same issue here. And so when we talk to friends that are on different staffs across the country, or even guys that we know in the National Football League, we're all trying to, you know, whereas usually you're very parochial in terms of your information, you don't want to get outside of your building. With this, I think we're all working together for the greater good. And that's to make sure that we do everything as safe as possible for the players and to make sure that everybody is doing similar things. That way we can ensure that when we do get to the point in time when everyone feels comfortable that college football is going to be played, that we're able to come in and know that everyone across the board is doing that as well.
Dirk Pomanski joining us from LSU football. Peter Burns and Katie George here on the Dan Levitard Show. You guys got really fancy rings, a couple of them yesterday, national championship rings. Who the hell designs these things? Walk me through this process of getting a championship ring.
Well, it's funny. So, you know, Peter, you've been someone who's been very close to our program. Last couple of years, you've come in and emceed our award ceremony. And that wasn't just because Tom Hart wasn't available either. You were
Thank
our
you.
First pick.
Appreciate
no question
that.
About that. But what we were able to do is, you know, for the last couple of years, talk a little bit about, you know, what the ultimate goal would be. And Greg Stringfellow, who's our associate athletic director for athletic equipment, and Louis Bourgeois, who's our director of football equipment, the three of us got together and we talked with Coach O. And, you know, Coach O's, he's a very thorough guy. He's very detailed and planned, but he was very kind of general in this. And he says, look, guys, I just want to make sure we give the guys the best thing that we can. And so for us, when you win the Southeastern Conference Championship, you win the College Football Playoff Championship, and then you get a national championship ring, we were able to design three rings. And so that gave us a lot of options and flexibility in terms of saying, well, we don't have to cram everything into one ring. So we were able to do a lot of things. And for us, having a program like LSU football where you have a lot of history and a lot of tradition, but you also have things that are kind of unique and specific to this 2019 season. So we were able to do that on those three rings. And it was a fun process. And certainly the highlight was last night for us to finally see the players get the rings because, you know, with the COVID shutdown, we weren't able to have the event that we would like to have around pro day and our spring game when all of our guys were going to be back in town. So we were able to make sure that we were safe, as safe an environment as we could to get the guys together. We held it in our indoor. We had the chairs spaced out, you know, 4 yards apart. Everybody was masked up. The equipment staff put the boxes with the rings underneath each chair. And then when the time came, the player was able to reach under their chair and get their ring. So it was a really cool moment, and it was something very fun to be a part of.
Last question, do you actually draw this out? Is there like a ring designer dude that just sits there and goes, all right, here's what you're thinking, like a sketch artist, and they put it together? What's that process like?
Well, I talked about it a little bit on Off the Bench with Jordy and T-Bob this morning, that we had Greg and Lewis and myself for the last couple of years to talk about when we win a championship, this is what we wanted to look like. So we've had some, you know, I guess you'd say cocktail napkins with things scrambled on there, different ideas that we had. But you're right. Once you get to the point in time where you win the Southeastern Conference championship, you're playing for the national championship, it gets a little bit more specific. So yeah, we worked with Jostens. They came in. They had one of their top designers work with us, and we made sure within the confines that we had within our budget, because there are limits to how much we can spend on these rings, we did everything we could to make it as nice as possible for these guys. And when we got a chance to show it to Coach O, he was very excited about it. And then since then, you know, we've been able to give it to our team, and they've been excited about it as well. It's been a unique situation for us dealing with all the COVID stuff. So for us to be able to kind of tie up the 2019 season right here at the end of this with the ring ceremony was pretty cool.
Katie, I've emceed their football awards back-to-back years. They are undefeated since I've taken the podium. So I imagine the ring. I'll check the mail today, Katie, to see if my ring came in. Derek Pomanski, LSU football buddy. We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thanks, Derek.
You got it. You guys take care. There.
Did you see the documentary? Yeah, I was in it. Classic. Any of the second hour, third hour, still here, by the way, on ESPN Radio. We'll continue to move on. Bill Barnwell is going to be joining us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. ESPN always presented by Progressive Insurance. Peter Burns and Katie George here with you. Billy, we had a poll earlier today when I asked the question, what was the biggest Miami sports moment? You guys are down there in the 305, so I'm trying to figure out like what moment personifies Miami sports. You update the people on what the decisions were and what the vote results are at this point.
All right. So Twitter limits us to four options. So we included the Ray Allen shot, the decision, LeBron's game six in Boston. And then just to break up the heat, we put Pudge's play at the plate in the NLDS. So right now, 55% say Ray Allen shot, followed by the decision at 17%. The Pudge play at 16% and LeBron's game six in Boston at 10%.
Are you guys in agreement with that?
I don't see Anthony shaking his head. He's saying that's not the case. Why is that, Anthony?
Guys, the LeBron game six in Boston was one of the biggest moments in Miami Heat history other than the Ray Allen shot. And something that doesn't get talked about, LeBron's elbow jumper in game seven, that kind of goes under the radar too. I'd give LeBron the nod over Pudge.
Okay, so the LeBron game six moment as opposed to... I'm still shocked that, Katie, that we don't have like the decision not being the absolute moment. Because do we think
that...
Yeah,
but you're looking at it from the fact, like cause and effect, right? The decision happens and then they win two championships. Like, that's not when you look at it at face value and you're voting on it. The decision, yes, it was a big deal, but it wasn't a cool necessarily moment. What came after the decision
I don't know.
Was the cool
Stugatz
moment.
And Lebatard had said it. There were half a dozen people going wild in Chili's in sports bars in Miami when this happened. By the way, we are replaying that rant. 20 minutes from now, the epic open of the Dan Lebatard show the morning after LeBron, because 10 years ago today, it was LeBron making his decision. We are replaying that entire rant. We did it earlier in hour one. It was awesome. I got to hear it again. But isn't it like without that moment, right? Like by the time Ray Allen makes the shot, is it the biggest play? Yes. But the moment, like in 30 years from now, Chris, Miami guy, Billy, Anthony, like 30 years from now, are you going to be telling your kids about the Ray Allen shot? Will you tell them about the time that LeBron said he's going to Miami?
Ray Allen shot, easy.
Okay.
Like, and just in terms of like the way I exploded out of my chair when that happened, like that, I can't think of my whole sports life because I saw my whole sports life flash before my eyes right there. We were losing. Bosch rebound, out to Allen, Mike three. Bang! I can still remember it. Goosebumps.
Were you watching from Chili's as well that night? Like you were the decision?
Yeah.
No, I was in my bedroom with like my covers over my head, like only my face exposed.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
That's a vivid picture, to be fair.
Yeah, that was a little
Yoda,
much for me.
Yoda, yeah.
By the way, news coming out right now that just broke 15 minutes ago, I see across our Twitter accounts from @Chiefs. This is a Kansas City Chiefs Twitter account. Says, quote, under guidance from local authorities and the CDC, Arrowhead Stadium will be reduced capacity this year. Not a surprise, Katie, but are you shocked that we're talking about this as we're almost, we're still, I guess, a month out and we might not even have preseason games?
No, I'm not surprised. But I would like to know what reduced capacity means. Do we have a percentage yet, or are they just preparing fans across the country, fans specifically in Kansas City right now, that they're not going to be at maximum capacity? I don't think anybody thought 100% was going to be doable, but is that 50%? Is that 25%? I mean, what are we working with? That's the next step to this that I want to know.
if Kansas City is doing it, there's going to be other teams that announce that coming up probably later today or at least this week. So let's get into that with Bill Barnwell. He's going to talk about Patrick Mahomes, what it means for Tua Tagovailoa, Joe Burrow, as they're getting ready for their NFL season as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Katie_George05, myself at Peter Burns ESPN. We're about 15 minutes away from Levitard's epic rant here on The Levitard Show.